This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Paul. Our special guest is Joy Ambassador.
Let's start at the very beginning.
Sorry, Sally.
Julie, I love it.
Joy Ambassador, Lord Mayor of Melbourne, directly elected Lord Mayor of Melbourne, Sally Capp, who I call Sally Von Capp. Good morning, Sally. And that's
good
because you're a bit
morning,
of a Sound of Music fan,
and
aren't you?
I love a good musical. I could sing.
Go on, can you give us a couple of bars, The Hills Are Alive? Go on, give it a go.
Not. Do you want people to keep listening?
Yeah. Go on, you've done it before. Go on.
No.
That particular song? The Hills Are Alive.
Yay.
I'm flat.
That's all right. Fantastic.
I've risen to the challenge.
A great segue. How are we doing musical theatre in Melbourne, Sally? Is there anywhere in Australia you can get such a vibrant selection of shows?
No. And it's important because it's a great way of continuing to support great talent and great people that work behind the scenes and make sure that the industry is vibrant is to keep having so many shows. And the reason we can do that is because people keep turning up as very enthusiastic audiences. It's wonderful.
And going for drinks and dinners pre and post, it just is great to keep the centre alive in the evening.
It is. The energy that comes from theatre crowds is incredible. Sometimes if I'm feeling a little bit low in the afternoon and it's Wednesday matinee, I will go and stand outside the Regent and just let all of that energy wash over me as the crowd comes out. It's wonderful. And we're about to start the investment and the work on the upgrading of the theatre district on Exhibition Street.
Right.
So we're adding wider pavements, lovely areas for theatre crowds to gather before, during and after the show and to really make that, I think the investment there reflect how important theatre is to us, whether it's musical theatre or drama, whatever, we absolutely love it.
I mean, it's uplifting, you know.
Yes.
But also it's a significant economic contributor to Melbourne. And to Melbourne's nightlife. You know, Melbourne at night, the CBD at night, is very different to during the day. And I want people to imagine, just imagine if those theatres weren't there. Just imagine if they didn't, you know, if that district didn't have the support of the council, if it didn't have the support of the folk who run the theatres and everything. I mean, that'd be a bit dead, wouldn't it?
It's a major part of who we are as well, and goes to our DNA. And it's lovely when international producers and directors and artists come over and they really reflect on Melbourne in the same sentence as New York and London, Broadway and West End, and to be in that sort of company reflects our standing internationally, and for us to appreciate that locally I think is important. But as you said, it is uplifting. Our nighttime economy is going gangbusters. Saturday and Sundays are bigger crowds than we've ever seen before. People are really getting into Christmas, even with this crazy weather of ours. And for us, we are very mindful of how much we need to respect and value theatre.
And just while we're on a CBD late night loving, my parents are visiting and I sent them into the CBD and they were delighted to see all the lights on Town Hall and just told me when they came back home just how festive it all looked.
Oh, that's
so congratulations
so nice.
To the team down there for pulling that together.
They've done a really good job, and we've got a whole lot of new decorations this year as well and some great things to do, whether you're into Christmas roller skating. We've got fantastic Christmas movie-a-thons at the Capitol Theatre, which you've got to visit.
You're
going to
be roller skating?
I think I will.
Can you?
Not very coordinatedly, but it's good fun. Talk about having a laugh.
Yeah,
exactly.
We've got a question from a listener here, Sally. Can you please ask Sally about the e-scooters, and I call it the CB&D. This listener thinks they're a bit of a menace. He's almost been run over. So tell us about the e-scooters. Because I know, for example, in Singapore, there's a little bit of an issue with them. okay, the living arrangements are different in Singapore, where in a lot of buildings they're banned because they catch fire. You know, the e-scooters.
Okay. They be the private ones, the ones that people have at home.
Yes, not
I can't comment on those ones. But I have heard about some of those issues. Look, to John, we absolutely have to remain diligent about reminding people and then, frankly, punishing people if they do ride on the footpath, if they're riding without their helmets, if they're doing the wrong thing, too much yee-haw-ing as they go down the streets. But the e-scooter trial, which has been extended again, has been resoundingly successful, more than 6 million trips done. I've just been in Dubai at COP28 and I was able to report to so many people about the reduction in emissions because of car trips averted due to e-scooter trips. And this form of public transport has become a really essential part of our transport network. We do need to make sure people are doing the right things, but there are lots of benefits to e-scooters, and we are seeing a proliferation of these programs right across the world because they're well used and they have multiple benefits. But I do acknowledge that people doing the wrong thing can be menacing, as John said. It's a constant part of our conversations with Victoria Police on how we can do better with the Victorian government, but also with the operators, because we've said if they can't show ways of improving technology and with geofencing and geospatial technology these days.
Tech, exactly.
They should be able to tell if a scooter is being ridden on the footpath and just stop it.
Mm. Because, you know, I've had this discussion with Deputy Lord Mayor Nick Rees before.
Yes.
And I think, you know, the geofencing and everything, it doesn't always work that accurately because of, you know, tall buildings and other things. Mm. But at the end of the day, I mean, they can stop the scooter being used outside the area that's allowed to be used. They can turn it off there. Yeah.
And they also know who the users are because you have to log on so they'll know who the people are who are offending.
Paul, this is a really good point, because if John was to even take a quick snap or just remember where he was at the time that behaviour happened, the operators, and make a complaint to the operators, they can usually pinpoint it with unbelievable accuracy and then fine the rider. They are best placed to do that. And, of course, if you're using a Lime, for example, which is attached to Uber, Uber can then start to have punishments like disabling your Uber Eats account. Oh. And apparently that is more compelling than a fine from the police in terms of
especially at this time of year.
Yes.
Now, we've got another one here, and Grant says, why would I come into the city with all the protests constantly disrupting transport? Well, Sally can't control the protests, right? The police can, but it's important to remember here, Grant, much as we find it inconvenient, the right to protest is very important. And if we get to a situation like where the heavy hand of government says, no, we're not going to allow you to demonstrate, we could all move to Singapore, where, you know, there's a little corner in a park you can stand on a little box and wave your arms around. It's important, the right to protest, but I get it, Grant. Yeah, it is inconvenient. You know, I've been held up, you know, when I'm driving somewhere with a protest, and, you know, a lot of the times I don't agree with what people are protesting about. But, you know, the right to protest is very important. It's called democracy.
Hmm. I agree with you absolutely. I'm in the city every day and it is frustrating when you are held up for some reason or another as a result of a protest, or as you said, sometimes it's quite emotional, the response to the issue. But the fact is, I would rather have all of that and live in a society that not just gives us the right to protest, but values the right of freedom of speech and protest, not vilification, not racism, not discrimination. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the right to protest, and I think appreciating that is important. I get the inconvenience, but I'd take inconvenience every day.
Yeah. There you go. Democratically elected. directly elected.
Well, I guess that's Lord right. Mayor, I better believe in it.
Sally Capp, you are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Paul. Stay with us.
Paul and Macca here on Saturday Magazine. We're talking to Melbourne Lord Mayor Sally Capp.
And Sal, there's been some discussion. We've had this discussion a lot of times before about statues and the genders that are represented in the statues around Melbourne. Mm. I know yourself and Deputy Lord Mayor Nick Rees and the council have a bit of a plan here, a bit of an idea.
We do. Well, it's more than an idea now. We went out to community since last time we spoke about this, and you would have spoken to Nick. In fact, yep. He's out doing some media, other media, at the moment.
He's a media tart, isn't he? He's a real media
tart. He's good at it.
Yeah.
And so more than an idea. So we've taken a lot of suggestions from the public, and it was wonderful to see how enthusiastic people are about addressing this gender imbalance in statues. Because remember, statues really do matter.
Yes.
It says to people, these are leaders that we should respect and we value their contribution. And the fact that women are so underrepresented in Melbourne needs to be addressed. So the announcement this week that Vida Goldstein is going to be the first statue is really exciting. Vida has the most incredible story, which I just didn't know enough about, but she made us the top of the pops, the gold class in women's rights back in the early 1900s when she lobbied for and was successful in getting the women's right to vote, which New Zealand had already done, but also
just before. Just before,
but the women's right to stand for office,
yes.
And the two came together, and we were best in class around the world for women's rights at the time, and Vida and the suffragette movement here in Melbourne were really held up as leading the way for women's rights around the world. And I know that Vida and many women then went to influence the conversations happening in the UK, conversations happening in the US. In fact, I believe Vida went to meet Teddy Roosevelt and have a chat about women's rights. They didn't happen for some time. But not only did she get the right for women to stand for office, she then stood for office four or five times herself, unsuccessful every time, but used the opportunity to raise awareness on issues important for women, equal pay, addressing domestic violence, just general rights to work, things we're still talking about today. And I think having Vida magnificently represented here in Melbourne via a statue is a wonderful outcome.
So, Macca, just some stats there to support that. So presently there are 580 statues in Melbourne's public spaces. Fewer than 2% of them represent women. And in the city of Melbourne specifically, 25 statues, of which only 5 are women. So it's a great addition, Sally.
Yeah.
And where will that statue go?
Still to be determined. We're finding the appropriate spot, but that will also depend on what sort of shape and height.
You could put it in a bike lane.
Absolutely not. That's where the e-scooters go, the bike lanes.
But, of course, she's been recognised by naming a seat in the federal parliament after her.
Mm.
And, of course, that seat is represented by a woman, Zoe Daniel.
Yes.
And so it's appropriate, not a statue for Zoe, but a statue of Ida to recognise her contribution.
Yeah.
But, you know, we recognise that contribution when we renamed the seat all those years ago.
We did, but so I don't think that has the same sort of mass.
It doesn't, no.
Appreciation or recognition, but I think that was a very positive thing. Was Zoe the first woman to
the member represent? For that seat? I think she might be.
Yeah, I think she said she was.
I think they're great stories. Vida's a wonderful Melburnian, and she really created massive positive change in our society, and she's deserving of the recognition. So we're excited about this.
Great choice. Mm. Message to come through, Sally. Next question for you. How did you enjoy the NGV Gala?
Oh, my gosh. Trick question, because I didn't go. I was going to go, and I'm so sorry to the NGV.
The hottest ticket in town.
It's become the biggest thing in town. But I was at COP28 in Dubai, which was an absolute thrill and honour to be there representing Melbourne and to be part of Team Australia. Talking about climate change and how we respond more quickly to climate change. And it was an incredible experience to be there, almost as good as being at the NGV Gala. And I'm really sorry I missed it. But by all reports, it was as glamorous and as brilliant as always.
So you're going to the Bowery Ball next year?
At the Please explain.
At the NGV. I think it's called, hang on.
Is it called the Bowery Ball? Oh, I didn't know that.
There's a, I think it's a separate ball. The NGV Gala is separate, but there's, I think what 317 is saying is there's going to be a huge queer ball coming up at the NGV next year,
really?
Which may be called the Bowery Ball.
Yeah.
Anyone knows anything about that, we'd love to go.
Yeah, let us know.
Okay. Well, it sounds We're in. Good.
So talk about COP28. What actually happens there, Sally? Are there lots of side meetings?
Oh, so many. It's actually manic in terms of the number of meetings and activities, and this COP was the first time that cities had been invited formally to participate in the program, and we had what was called a local climate action summit as part of the first week of COP28. That meant that mayors from around the world got together, lots of different speakers, listening to each other, learning from each other, I think is really important. And then we also were included in a lot of the formal programs. So I got to hear Modi speak and Macron speak and Kamala Harris speak, John Kerry, who's a special envoy on climate now. I had the thrill of doing a panel with Hillary Clinton talking about heat and the impact on women. But I also got to hang out with, I mean, one morning on the train I was sitting with Amazonians with all of their feathers and face tattoos and hearing their stories and learning more about their experiences, tiny NGOs that had made the effort to be there to really champion their causes around the world. But it's the biggest conference in the world, 70,000 people coming together to make a difference. Nobody talks about the science anymore. We've all moved on from that. It's about what we should be doing, how quickly we can make it happen.
You don't watch Sky News then?
I did see Sky News.
They're climate skeptics. They don't think there is any science.
Okay, well, there weren't any climate skeptics there. It was really about pushing and shoving each other to do better, to do it quicker, and to really make a difference. There are still lots of questions on how we can achieve targets more quickly. And it was terrific to hear lots of different views on that. But what I really did see as well is a lot of challenging to each other to say, actually, can we make this happen more quickly? To see Antonio Guterres up close and the way that he, in sometimes the most charming way, but also in the most forthright way, really challenges world leaders to set more ambitious targets and to be more focused but also more generous in the way that they're allocating resources to really make a difference on climate change.
Now, the City of Melbourne, you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, the electricity that the City of Melbourne uses, is that 100% green? I think
it is. It's 100% renewable energy, and we achieved that by creating a power purchasing agreement for wind farms. And it is a model where we work with the private sector, universities, actually state government, as well as the big energy users in the city. And we've done two of these now, and it's reduced our total emissions across the municipality by 5% in one big chunk, which shows you what's possible. Still a lot of work to do, but we use 100% renewable energy for every street light in the city. Every elliptical in our gym, every barbecue is now electrically charged.
There you go.
And so
Green
this
Sangers.
Is a very positive thing. But as an organisation, we've still got some work to do, but importantly, really across our municipality, and our targets are our municipality, 100% renewable energy by 2030, zero carbon emissions net by 2040 means that everybody in the city has a role to play in achieving those targets. The other thing that was interesting about COP28 from our perspective was that the majority of our emissions come from the built environment, so existing commercial buildings, and that really came onto the agenda, they said, for the first time in a significant way at COP28, was really looking at urban environments and starting to look at mitigation and adaptation in urban environments, which when you think about it is important because more than 50% of people now live in cities around the world. Cities are the biggest emitters. They have to be the biggest player in solutions.
And just briefly, 317 has asked, who was the most charismatic leader you met on your visit?
Oh, what a good question. The most charismatic. It might sound a bit strange, but the Prime Minister of Barbados, an amazing woman, was really owned the stage, even being with other leaders of bigger countries and more well-known countries. She really dominated the conversation. Mm. And for us, even listening to the new president of Fiji, for example, you know, many of these places are the most impacted by climate change because of rising sea levels and the impact they're seeing on the economic drivers like fishing, for example, and what's happening in their communities, and to see them have the opportunity to stand up and have a voice and put that so well was fantastic. You know, people like Hillary Clinton and Michael Bloomberg to meet these global leaders and to they're so engaging, they're so interested and interesting, but they're also very humble people. And to know that they use their power for good is incredibly inspiring.
So I've actually got here some information on the Bowery Ball.
Oh, good.
24th of March 2024, Bowery Ball at the NGV, an unforgettable night of dance, drag, music and fashion.
Sounds like it'll be huge.
And it's part of NGV International, which I think dress code, dress... Dress as though your life depends on it or don't bother.
That's a good one.
Isn't it?
That is a good one.
Isn't it?
So, 24th of March, I'll put it in my diary. Yes.
Thank you for that, 317. Green Line, let's race through them.
Well, Green Line, this week the master plan was approved. I know I'm impatient, like Macca is impatient to see this happening, but the experts have been working on this. And, yes, it has taken 4 years to get to this point. But I would say, you know, taking from an idea to reality, this is
pretty
hard
good going.
Slog. Yeah. And we've got there with the master plan being approved this week. It's all systems go now and we will literally see work commence. We've still got the tennis to get through and Moomba. We love Moomba. 70 years. Oh, by the way, happy birthday.
Oh.
30 years. Joy 94.9.
Yes. Isn't it?
It's fantastic. So a lot ahead of us, a very busy city, but really terrific to see.
Mac has had the scissors in his back pocket waiting for the ribbon on Green
Line. I'm going to have to come up with a ribbon cutting ceremony ASAP.
I tell you
we've got a new hub going in down there so that people can actually understand and see conceptually Green Line. That's early next year. Why don't you come and cut the ribbon for the hub, Macca?
Will we be able to ride an e-scooter on it when it's done?
Very carefully and responsibly.
Okay, what about
with the helmet?
We'll do a little ribbon thing, but I reckon when it's all open and everything, how about you and I, you know, do a few hundred yards on skates? That'll make for an interesting.
Wow, I was thinking more. Can't wait to see that. You lead the way, Macca. Okay. That'd be fantastic.
I was thinking more of an outside broadcast than a skating broadcast.
Oh, yes, an outside broadcast.
Yeah, outside
that's a
broadcast.
Good
one of the first times I met you, you were doing an outside broadcast at Town Hall, which was fantastic.
Yeah. Before we go, Sally, we're going to have to wrap up in a second for the news. Christmas time in the city, what should people be doing?
Oh, well, the projections and the decorations are absolutely superb. Come in. I said earlier there's a new feature this year, Movie Marathon at the Capitol Theatre for all the daggy and sometimes scary Christmas movies. You can Christmas roller skate in Argyle Square in Carlton. Uh-huh. There are selfie moments all over the city. The Christmas carnival's underway at Birrarung Ma. Come and have your photo taken with Santa. Simon looked a bit like Santa. His beard was amazing.
He?
And
he says Joy FM again. I'm going to say
And, of course, our retailers and hospitalitarians have risen to new levels.
Hospitalitarians?
Yes, to be able to welcome people for fantastic Christmas experiences. That and so much more. Jump on What's On, have a look, and please visit our new library at Queen Victoria Market. It's called Nam Nagu. It's an incredible acknowledgement of traditional owner culture and art. It's like an art gallery and a library, dedicated children's space, new terrace. Come on down, Nam Nagu, Queen Victoria Market. That was my last plug. And Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Well, of course, on Christmas Day, we do have a special show.
We do.
We do every year, Paul and I, from 9 till noon.
Can't wait, Macca.
And we will actually be speaking with you on Christmas
Day.
I'm
looking forward to it. Yeah. I'll have to stop shelling the prawns.
Yeah, but, you know, we speak to Sally.
And join you, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's a highlight of our morning, Sally.
It is. Oh, is it? And it mine. Is.
Yes.
And the entire family.
So, once again, Sal, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it. Thanks for your work you do as Lord Mayor. You do make Melbourne a better place, and all your colleagues on the council work really hard at that. And as a Joy Ambassador, thank you for that.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your leadership, your advocacy, and the positive difference you make in our city and community.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.